Hello, hello, hello. We are back for another Trailblazer Chat at the Procurement Games Podcast, an open conversation. My name is Arlen Pingle, CEO of Mackey Company, and your host for this podcast. Mackey Company is a strategic consulting company focused on procurement, policy development, involving entrepreneurs and workforce in the realm of government and private sectors. Our focus is on communities of color, women, and veterans, and how we can strategically assist this historically marginalized group and position them for the win. Every week, we feature an entrepreneur's journey of success and failures in getting contracts with federal, state, and local agencies, along with the private slash major corporations, often referred to as primes. When the last Thursday of the month hits, we feature an industry or government agency expert, one who is paving the way to truly, quote, level the playing field and position us for success in this ever-changing world of procurement, policy, entrepreneurship, and workforce. Joining us today is the director of the Minnesota Governor's Workforce Development Board, Ben Balio. Ben, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm awesome. I'm so excited to hear about all of the stuff that you've got going over there at the Governor's Workforce Board and really allowing our listeners to learn more about what it is that you do, what is the purpose of the Workforce Board, and with the labor shortage, with the workforce shortage that's going on, not just in Minnesota, but nationwide, anxious to really hear how the planning and all that stuff is going down, and more importantly, how our community, our minorities, our women, our veterans are tied into that plan. So with that, we want to learn first about you, talk about what's going on in the organization, and how we work together, and how we bring more attention to changing the ways that workforce is done to be more inclusive.
Yeah, so I can, you know, just tell a little bit about my background and how I got into public service, which I think really kind of stems from my upbringing, why I was really drawn to public service. So I was born in the little town of Palmer, Alaska, which is about 40, 45 miles from Anchorage. My mom had a pretty rocky childhood herself, and so she became justice involved at a pretty early age and was in and out of the foster care system, and unfortunately really never was able to overcome some of those, you know, systemic and, you know, generational barriers. And so she spent most of her life really battling addiction and being involved with the legal system. And so for me, just I'm passionate about those things because, you know, I had that personal impact for sure. My dad was a chef. He immigrated to the United States from Italy in 1980. And so, you know, despite some of those challenges, you know, he faced as an immigrant, he was able to have himself a pretty good career. But, you know, neither of my parents were really around a lot during my childhood. My brother and I moved around a lot, a lot of relatives. We grew up in Alaska and throughout the Pacific Northwest. And then moved to Minnesota when I was in high school, and I ended up staying here, and I didn't really know what I was going to do with my life. I went off to college. I went to the University of Minnesota Morris, ended up getting my degree in political science and really feeling like public service was the route I was going to go. And so, you know, in my current role for the state of Minnesota, I get to work underneath Deputy Commissioner Hamza Warfa at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And really, he has made it his mission, and we've really made it our mission to try to make our public workforce development system more inclusive to more people, more accessible and responsive to not just employers, but job seekers and folks that are trying to get education or training that they need to advance their careers.
Very cool. Very cool. So you couldn't get far enough from Alaska that you had to move into the tundras of Minnesota.
Well, and you know, I'll say Alaska is very cold, gets a lot of snow, but Minnesota is the coldest place I've ever lived in my entire life.
So it's a fallacy that Alaska is frigid and cold. It's actually Minnesota.
Yeah.
It's
maybe a little more sunlight down here in Minnesota, though.
Holy cow. I don't know that I've ever heard that. So you mentioned the workforce board there. Tell me a little bit about what it is that you do, but perhaps go a little bit macro. What is the Governor's Workforce Board?
The Governor's Workforce Development Board, or GWDB, is Minnesota's federally required state workforce development board. So when Congress passed the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, or WIOA, in 2014, it required that every state create a state workforce development board to really help guide the work of the system and create policies, funding formulas, or develop best practices to really help drive the system. And every state's required to have a board like the GWDB in Minnesota. One of the big duties of state workforce development boards like the GWDB is that we're responsible for writing and revising our state's four-year strategic plan under WIOA. So how are we going to spend those federal allocations that our states get? What types of programs or strategies are we going to prioritize when we're spending those things, and helping develop strategies or policies or other recommendations for the agencies or the other partners to follow? Like every other state workforce board in the country, over 50% of our members come from business and industry. Owners, CEOs, HR executives. And they have to have optimum policymaking authority within the organization. And then at least 20% have to come from labor unions or community-based organizations to really be representatives of the workforce. And then we have members that come from the state agencies. So there are commissioners here in Minnesota that lead up different state agencies. We've got education, both secondary and post-secondary, and then other partners too, legislators, local elected officials. So we actually have the largest state board in the country here in Minnesota. So I believe we have over 40 voting members and 16 non-voting members. So it's a pretty large group. And so we try to, you know, do some work through our committees. Other state boards kind of have that strategy. And then employers come from would have been identified as priority sectors. Those are healthcare and social assistance, professional and business services, which includes IT, manufacturing, construction, and then environment, natural resources, which of course here in Minnesota includes agriculture, mining, and energy.
So that's a huge playing field that you're involved with, and you're directing traffic in the middle of the game.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of really passionate people. You know, they're willing to, you know, spend their time serving the state as a member of the board. You know, they're not, you know, compensated in any way to be a board member. And really, we're not directly allocating funds. So we're really asking folks to come to the table to better the system and better the state. And these are really dedicated people that are looking to be public servants as well. So I mentioned too, we have committees. And so sometimes committees drive a lot of the work. We have a disability equity committee, a racial equity committee, a couple other standing committees, and then we're actually just about to launch a task. It's going to be called the New Americans Task Force, and we're really hoping to help move the needle for our immigrant and refugee communities here in Minnesota by really identifying, you know, what programs exist in other states that are working, what resources do we have here in Minnesota that could be better leveraged to serve those communities, and like I said, hoping to move the needle for those communities.
So I know that our listeners are sitting here going, Lynn usually talks about procurement and how to get contracts. And we pivot into workforce because our community is in that. You just named some of the players in our world, private corporation CEOs, you have impact of organizations in the community that are contributing to this. And one of the key things that I like about having you here is the fact that your board is in charge of writing policies. And that's key, because when policies are written to be inclusive, then we have that opportunity to influence what's going to go down in best practices. This is how workforce ties into the procurement process, because at the end of the day, our entrepreneurs are going to end up tapping into the workforce. And we want to understand how the funding, how it came down, how the decisions were made, and things like that. How does one get involved? How do I become part of the Governor's Workforce Development Board? Is that like an application process? Do I just call you and say, hey, Ben, I want to volunteer for a committee?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. And that's something I'm excited to talk a little bit about, because when I entered my role here with the Governor's Workforce Development Board, and I don't mean to knock anyone that was serving on the board, but there was a diversity issue, right? And who's at the table does matter. We've put in a pretty concerted effort to just try to make sure that we're getting folks from, you know, different communities represented on the board. And we've, you know, specifically calling out the fact that we didn't have a lot of racial equity and racial diversity on the board. And so that's something that we've been been trying to change. You know, every state workforce development board, the members, particularly those from business or labor or community-based organizations, they're appointed by the governor, and that's consistent in every state. There's a process, you know, here in Minnesota, it's done through our Secretary of State's office. Every 6 months or so, we end up having a kind of another round of appointments go through from the governor's office. Process kind of starts from, you know, their application through that system, and then I reach out to folks that have applied. And there are also local workforce development boards. And so here in Minnesota, we have 16 local workforce boards. It varies, you know, some less populated states actually just have one. I was talking to my colleague from Nevada. I know they have two, but then, you know, you go out to California and I think they have dozens. And so it really depends on the, you know, the size of the state and how many local workforce boards they have. And serving on a local workforce board is also a really great way to try to get involved and really like have a say in how workforce development resources are being spent in your community. Those really are the entities that actually have some of the most say over funding decisions, right? So when federal funds come to a state, like they do here in Minnesota, there's some dollars that like the state agencies can choose what to do with it, but the vast majority of the funding is actually allocated almost directly to those local workforce boards. And it's really at the local level where a lot of those funding decisions are made, you know, including programs that are meant to serve specific communities and, you know, break down some of those barriers that I know you've talked about.
So when you talk about local, is that, and the 16 workforce boards that exist, are they county? Are they city? Are they, like, how does that sit in our state?
It varies a bit, and I know it varies a bit in other states as well, but, you know, of those 16 boards, we have two that are, you know, the main administrative entity is the city. So we have the city of Minneapolis and the city of Duluth have their own local workforce development boards. Beyond that, we have a couple of counties where it's at the county level. So Washington and Anoka counties. There are a couple others where it's two counties. They have like a joint powers agreement. So in central Minnesota, we've got the Stearns-Benton Workforce Development Board, or in the South Metro, we've got the Dakota Scott County Workforce Development Board. And then in, you know, more rural areas, like throughout greater Minnesota, it's typically a nonprofit entity that has been contracted by or has some sort of agreement with those counties to do workforce development activities for that county.
So both the board and the committee member is governor appointed?
So at the state level, the governor appointed. At the local level, it depends on the administrative entity and kind of how their bylaws are written, but those are actually appointed at the local level.
At the local level.
The local workforce boards do have a lot of autonomy in a lot of the ways that they operate.
So how does Governor's Workforce Development Board influence inclusivity?
There's two primary goals to our current WIOA state plan. First is to reduce educational, skills training, and employment disparities based on race, disability, gender, or disconnected youth. And then the second is to build employer-led industry sector partnerships that expand the talent pipeline to be inclusive of race, disability, gender, and age to meet industry needs for a skilled workforce. We're actually going to, beginning next year, the Governor's Workforce Development Board will be beginning to oversee the local and regional planning processes. So we're hoping that having the Governor's Workforce Development Board oversee the local and regional planning process, that it really will inherently create more connectivity between the state plan and the local and regional plans.
And you know what's great about that is the fact that it starts at the top. That the influence to include minority participation, women participation, veteran participation is at the top. That diversity and inclusion comes in and resonates from there. And the fact that you guys write that policy and then now it's trickling down and now you're overseeing how their plan is to be, that anyone, regardless of race, gender, and ethnicity, is welcome and has opportunity. Let me pivot a little bit. Let's talk about the challenges that our workforce face. What can you share in your experience, in your knowledge, in what you're gathering in the state of Minnesota?
Not every issue that we're seeing is totally unique to Minnesota, but I think workers have more leverage than they've ever had before. You know, something our workforce development system has been saying for a long time, how we're seeing a lot of workers across the country and across Minnesota saying, I'm going to hold out until I find that job that actually gets me a family-sustaining income. think it's causing employers to rethink some of their things. We're slowly shifting and getting all of our partners and our training providers to really shift more in the direction of skills-based curriculum and making sure that we're teaching people specific skills that they need to get jobs.
Well, and that's that ecosystem. When you think about, you know, what the government sees and studies and gets millions and millions of reports on, and then it translates down to the private sector, and then the private sector may not be connecting to the public, right, where the workforce is. You know, we got this skilled labor pool, but no jobs available, and you keep promoting this job, but nobody's, you haven't even studied. Even in procurement, Ben, we talk about the government and the private sectors not truly understanding who is in the market. They got millions of dollars they're creating these programs for, and the people that are creating the programs are also disconnected and don't understand the needs of the public, don't understand what the marketplace is, right? Who can do the work or what work needs to be done? They just know that a program has to be created. I look at entrepreneurship as a pathway. I look at workforce as a pathway for that individual.
And I think that's something that in my role I've come to realize is that sort of training for entrepreneurs, making sure they have all the resources, that's called economic development. And then, you know, workforce development's treated as something differently over here. And I think we all realize it is all economic development, right? And I think that's, you know, been a big priority of the board. And we're trying to work with the agencies. And it's I know it's a priority at the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development right now. Entrepreneur support training piece is one way that we can try to better bridge those systems. And at the same time too, you know, I think there's a little bit more overlap between the types of opportunities that we might want to put people into that would lead them to a career pathway as an employee, or, you know, onto a different pathway as an entrepreneur or business owner. And there's a lot of overlap in those skills and supports that we can be giving those people. And here in Minnesota, we have the CLIMB program, which is for dislocated workers who, so they've been, you know, unemployed through no fault of their own, and maybe they want to start a business of their own, and they can try to enroll in that program. And so rather than, you know, putting them into training that, you know, gets them employment somewhere, it'll actually help train them for starting their own business.
I know at Mackey Company, we do a lot of policy development for inclusivity, and we work on the workforce side, we work on the entrepreneur side, we work on the programmatic side. The things that we look at is what's going on in community generationally, right? Any Gen Z is predisposed to be an entrepreneur, and yet they don't have the skills training, they don't have the trades training, they don't have the knowledge. Some are opting on college or starting college careers later on, and we need to accommodate that. And the first thing that they're going to look for is, how do I learn a skill set? How do I get into the trade? And here's a pool, a Gen Z and older pool that is entering the workforce. Gen Z is anybody born after 96, I believe. Right now, in their 24, 25-year-olds, I'm going to make a career out of this, or I'm going to start that business. I love that there's a program called The Climb, because that's exactly what that pivotal moment is for the Gen Zs and the next generation.
Well, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, the government silos, which I know you're familiar with, I'm sure a lot of your audience is familiar with, I think those are some of the areas that we as a board are trying to really hone in on. I mean, that silo between workforce development and economic development, the big silo between education systems and workforce development systems, right? So it's pretty inconsistent across areas, and we definitely have some silos to break down in that space.
So what programmatic services are out there in the execution part that is advantageous for communities of color, women, and veterans? It's not necessarily as entrepreneurs, right? Because again, we're talking about workforce community here.
For sure. And so I'll just, you know, start with, I don't directly oversee these programs, but I can talk a little bit about the federal programs. The WIOA funds four core programs is how they're divided up. And the first is Title I, which is adult and youth programs. And so a lot of career pathways programming is done through this, typically funded again at the local level. So a local workforce development board will either, you know, do services in-house or partner with community-based organizations. And so that's kind of like the big bucket of you know, career-focused training. And typically they'll partner with organizations, you know, in the Twin Cities, for example, Goodwill Easter Seals or Teamster Service Bureau are providers of dislocated worker services. And so those are one of those big Title I programs. Then there's Title II, which is adult basic education, housed out of the Minnesota Department of Education. And so those are programs for, you know, adults who, you know, maybe don't have a high school diploma or English isn't their first language. So like ESL courses are also housed over there. A lot of community-based training providers, you know, get funding from the education department to then, you know, fund that programming. For Title II, the Minnesota Department of Education will partner with typically community-based organizations. An example, Literacy Minnesota here in Minnesota provides services to help folks get to where they need to be to be in the workforce. Title III is what's often referred to as Wagner-Peiser. It's a federal, named after a federal act. And so, you know, a lot of those are called job service. It's different in every state, but for a long time, those were the folks who, if you went into a workforce center, or as we call them, career force location, those were the folks that would be at the front desk or be there to help someone work on their resume in the computer lab or walk them through some different options for training programs or, you know, support services that they might need. They've been doing a lot of direct outreach to folks that are, you know, receiving unemployment and have been doing a lot of by appointment only kind of work. And for Title III, those are all state merit staff. So those are the folks that are in those physical locations. But to really get access to those services for Title III, the best way to do that would be to go to careerforcemn.com. And then you can see each of the locations. I believe we have 50 physical Career Force locations throughout Minnesota. You know, during the pandemic, those all haven't been open. And so, you know, it's kind of a case by case basis on how you can access those. And Title IV, vocational rehabilitation services. So those are the programs for folks with disabilities. A lot of times when, you know, someone transitions from high school to, you know, post secondary school, those are the types of programs that'll assist them in finding employment or training needed to get them onto a career pathway as well. And that does include our state services for the blind. And then, you know, Title IV, a lot of those folks who are doing the work there are state level staff, you know, that partner with school districts or employers. Those tend to be, again, a little bit more state driven, but there are definitely, you know, local providers, like LifeWorks is a large one here in Minnesota.
You know, you never really know how in depth, right, the planning happens from your levels and how it really trickles down to community. Because rarely do we have someone on the show, Ben, that actually defines best practices and policies. You know, most of them are implementing their own programs, right? You're dictating how the programs are going to be done. And that's an awesome position to be in. And I'm really grateful that you're sharing that with us.
Well, thanks.
And with that, we hope you learned a thing or two about Minnesota's Governor's Workforce Board. Clearly, there are programs out there for you, our listeners, that you can take advantage of. The four title programs of the WAIO trickles down to your county and city workforce board, and then to service providers that I know one or two of you have to be. Ben's information is on our website, procurementgames.org. Reach out to him to learn more about how you can be an influencer of where dollars go and how the policies can be written so that our community get the most positive impact. We return next week to feature another entrepreneur who will share her experience as a media executive and producer while being one of the influential elders of the Rondo community in St. Paul, Minnesota. Robin Hickman Winfield joins our show to share her Soul Touch Productions company Thursday at 9 a.m. Finally, please remember to smash that like button and share your comment and thoughts about workforce and entrepreneurship. And don't forget to go after that low-hanging fruit. And always remember to look up at the tree filled with fruit ready to ripen. Until next time.